We mentioned last time, talking about the trumpets that were blown in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the sheet of the Sefer HaChinuch is that the trumpets were blown in the Beis HaMikdash daily, although not everyone agrees with that. The Rambam, for example, writes that they were only blown on special days, which would seem to be the simple reading of the Pasuk, right? Uv'yom simchaschem mo'adeichem, roshi chadsheichem, uskatem b'chatzotzros. They're supposed to blow the trumpets on days of your joy and festivals and Rosh Chodesh, but it seems like they are not blown every day. In addition to the practice that was established previously in the Chumash, that you're supposed to blow the trumpets when there's a during times of war and crisis. So the Sefer HaChinuch mentions this idea that the minimum number of blasts that were blown in the Beis HaMikdash were 21, and the most was 48. So I was thrown off by an incorrect citation here. That was the Maseches Erchin 13a, whereas it's really in 10a, apparently. But it was actually found in Maseches Sukkah, which is a place where most people know it from, this exact statement. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how that the minimum number of blasts is 21, but the most is 48. What's the most? When you have, it says, on a regular day, there were 21. Again, that's this is what you say, that's a riot of Sefer HaChinuch, that you have to blow the shofar, the trumpets every day in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not necessarily that this is the mitzvah, this is this mitzvah. That could be a different mitzvah. Rather, everybody agrees that there was some sort of trumpets as a musical instrument that was blown in the Beis HaMikdash every day, perhaps by the Levium, as opposed to the official halachic trumpets, which are blown by the Kohanim. So it says there were three blasts when the Beis HaMikdash opened, L'Psicha Shirim, when the gates of the Beis HaMikdash open, so they go, Tkia Truah Tkia, like we have in Rosh Hashanah, that's three blasts, to, a warbling or a broken blast, followed by, surrounded by the two straight blasts from the Chatzotzros. Then it says there were nine for the morning offering, and nine for the afternoon offering, and that was the minimum. So then you have 9 plus 9 plus 3 is 21. That's why it's the minimum number of blasts that were done on a daily basis. So when you have, again, we have extra offerings such as musaf and other things, then you had more blasts. And when you had simcha, the nisuch hamayim, when they used to pour the water libation on the altar during Sukkot, so then you had even more blasts. And then on Erev Shabbos, it says that there were even more blasts. That's how you get to 48. Because, in addition, again, this is not a part of this mitzvah, but that's just the Mishnah was reporting what happened, that in the times when, the Rambam writes, in the times when the Jewish people are properly settled on the land, they used to blow trumpets on Erev Shabbos, on Friday. So there were a few said, very serious sin. So that's why we have, it's really correct, some people find it annoying, but in Yerushalayim, the Jewish neighbors actually, but I think here in Borough Park, they might have this, that they blow a siren when it's almost time for Shabbos.
Far Rockaway, they do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, even, okay. Even Far Rockaway, wow, okay. So they blow a siren when it's almost time for Shabbos. I remember in Mea Sharim, they used to have loudspeakers blaring music.
Oh,
Shabbos. So who chooses the music? It was different tunes, every week.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
strange.
Who's in charge of the selection over here?
Mm-hmm.
But there
doesn't
is.
Doesn't sound very Meisharish, Sharimish though. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No, they had different songs that were related.
They were all songs about Shabbos.
Songs about Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so but this is a good idea that people they have to look at a clock. People sometimes might get caught up in their preparations. Mm-hmm. They might not remember the exact time.
So they might be looking at the wrong section of the bulletin that's on the refrigerator.
So you have a sound to remind you that it's almost time for Shabbos. So the thing is, so then you always get nervous because in Yerushalayim they sound the blast 40 minutes before sunset. That's right. The minhag in Yerushalayim that. You light candles 40 minutes before sunset. So that's for women. So women light candles, then they accept Shabbos. But for men, it's sort of counterproductive. So the men here, they sort of learn to ignore the blast. Mm-hmm. We still have another 40 minutes. Come on. And then Probably better if they blew a blast that was closer to Shabbos, so people would realize that you really have to stop doing melacha now. And so the Rambam. So these blasts indicate, the fact that these blasts were blown in advance of Shabbos indicates that they were done in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Tosefa Shabbos, of adding time to Shabbos. So the question is, so according to the Rambam, there is no such thing as Tosefa Shabbos. Most Rishonim, based on the Gemara of Rosh Hashanah and other places, says that there is a mitzvah deraisa to add time to Shabbos, whereas the Rambam holds, there's no such thing, there's no such mitzvah, certainly not deraisa, to add time to Shabbos, and perhaps even the Rabbanan. The only time where there's a mitzvah to add something, add extra time, is on Yom Kippur. They just would have to start fasting a little before Yom Kippur starts, and you have to continue fasting a little after Yom Kippur is technically over. So the Vilna Gaon and Be'er Agra wants to paskin like the Rambam. He thinks that the Rambam might be correct. So he says, but this is a big question from this, because we have all these stories of the blasts. Mm-hmm. What about the blast that they used to blow on Erev Shabbos, which is clearly before Shabbos, telling everyone they had to stop? They had to stop doing malacha. So the Vilna Gaon answer is that even if there's no technical mitzvah, even the Rabbanan, to do Tosefa Shabbos, nevertheless, it's a mitzvah. It's a fulfillment. It's a good thing that you're supposed to do, to add time to Shabbos, even if it's not technically required. But in any event, so we don't really hold like this, and we hold that there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of Tosefa Shabbos. So, midine ha-mitzvah, what are the laws of the mitzvah of the chatzotzer, so the blowing of the trumpets? Masha'am r'zicharam l'vracha, our sages tell us in Maseches Menachos, she'chatzotzeres ha'isa ba min ha'eshes shel kesef, kemo sheba b'kasu. The Torah says that you shall make for yourselves two trumpets of silver. So why doesn't the Rambam count this in the minyan ha-mitzvahs? Because that was only once. Not that you always have to make trumpets. If you had the same trumpets throughout the generations, so you just have to make it in order to blow. But there's no specific mitzvah to make the trumpets. That's why we don't count that in the minyan of the mitzvahs. But the trumpets are supposed to be made out of a solid piece of silver. They're supposed to be hammered out from a solid chunk of silver. Umishar mine matches psula. It says in the Torah explicitly that it has to be. It has to be silver, so if it were any other metal, then it would be no good. But by the way, that's the chatchila. But if you don't have access to a large enough chunk of silver, then you're allowed to take silver nuggets, various scraps of silver, and bang them together, or melt them together, and make the trumpet.
Once you melt them together, you have one big lump of silver, so that's not an issue.
Right, but the chatchila should be made of a natural... Yeah, I guess. Right. Yeah, that's right. Nakanami. Yeah, Nakanami, okay. Maybe, yeah.
A 5-pound chunk of silver,
that's
not usually found, so
I don't
think.
Maybe. Okay. You have to have two, like it says in the Chumash. Below Mosif and Almeya Ve'esrim. You can't add, that's the correct citation from Erchin 13a, which says that you cannot have more than 120. Ve'esrim Pratem Varim B'Sifri. That it's explained in the Halachic Medrash on Sefer B'Midbar, Rosh Hashanah, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, V'gam Kein, because obviously Rosh Hashanah is talking about the shofar, so it discusses the Chatzot Tzoros as well. V'gam Kein, B'Maseches Tainis, Beirush, Anu Mitzuvim, B'Tkiyas HaChatzot Tzoros, B'Eis Tzara. That we're, it says in the Chumash, but then Maseches Tainis explains more clearly that there's an independent mitzvah that we have to blow trumpets when we're in trouble, when there's a major calamity that the Jewish people are encountering, then you're supposed to blow the trumpets. So the question is, why don't we do this anymore?
Nobody's a mikdash.
Okay, maybe. So here, so the Sefer Chinuch now says, "V'nekes mitzvah zo bizman habayis." This is to be fulfilled in the times of the temple. But Kohanim she'aleihem ha-mitzvah l'tzkoa b'chatzotzros. It's they who perform this technical mitzvah. Again, it's possible that the Levim did it at other times. Uchinu she'kosu v'masa ha-machanos uvnei Aaron ha-kohanim yiskiu b'chatzotzros. It has to be the sons of Aaron, the Kohanim. Fine. So the question is, still, but if that's the case, so seemingly that should have nothing to do with the blowing be'is tzara. Why should that be tied into the Beis HaMikdash?
A central authority.
Well,
why do you need a central authority? Take a trumpet and... whenever you want. There's no problem of, you know, doing it unnecessarily. So this is a problem. The Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch already raises this issue, and he's not really sure of the answer. Some want to say that it's because we don't know how to make the chatzotzers properly, but then, what do you mean? Why? You just take a tube of silver and make it doesn't seem to be that they're...
Probably the Temple Institute probably already has.
Probably, but it's not so hard to make. This is one of the easiest things. There don't seem to be any technical halachic requirements. Others want to suggest that since the Pasuk says, Kisavo milchama ba'artzechem al hatzara tzoreschem, that it's only in Eretz Yisrael. So since the Jews were not in Eretz Yisrael for many years and they had a lot of problems, so they didn't blow the trumpets, and now that they're in Eretz Yisrael, they get used to not blowing trumpets. But it's not, the truth is, it's not really clear. But for some reason, the trumpets are tied into the Beis Hamikdash. There's no really one good solid answer to this question as to why we no longer blow trumpets when we are in danger.
And
maybe it was the Levian who fulfilled this mitzvah when they did it in conjunction with the Korban Mibnation Klei Nigun, like you say, that it's really the Levian who were in charge of blowing instruments. So here it clearly identifies the Kohanim as those who are blowing the trumpets. Again, the Sefer Chinuch takes that passage as a proof for his position that the trumpets were blown on a daily basis and not simply on special occasions, as the Rambam said. So again, the Rambam holds that since it wasn't a technical fulfillment of this mitzvah to blow the chatzotzros during the korbanos every day, so then the Levim could do that, but not the ones that were done at special times, because that was a particular mitzvah that had to be done by the Kohanim. So if the Kohanim neglected to do this mitzvah, they didn't blow the trumpet in conjunction with the offering of a korban, then they neglected to fulfill this mitzvah, as well as if they did it, if they neglected to do it at a time of tzara. At a time of trouble.
So the requirement of the trumpets blown in times of tribulation be the very same trumpets that are blown over the offerings of the Beis HaMikdash. And since we don't have those trumpets, then you can't just get any.
Is there a Moshe Feinstein says that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is also, okay. A possible explanation of this requirement is that the blowing of the trumpets in times of tribulation is intended to recall before Hashem the blowing over the offerings and thus invoke the merit. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't go with the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch was just saying that it's supposed to be like an alarm clock that helps you focus on, I guess, doing tshuva. I mean, he said it by the Korbanos, but it's supposed to be doing tshuva. Yeah, he says that. Okay. Parsha Shlach. We're starting a new parsha. Shlach l'cha anoshim yish b'shtei mitzvah zayim u'mitzvah lo sase achas. There are two positive commandments and one negative commandment. Mitzvah shim pei hei. Mitzvah chala. Oh, something that's applicable nowadays. A nice mitzvah we could sink our teeth into. Lahafri. What?
So to speak.
Yeah, well, we can't sink our teeth into the chala per se, but you get the idea. Hafrish chala mikol arisa v'litenos alakoin, that you have to separate chala from every batch of dough and give it to a kohen. Shenema reshis ariso sechem chala tarimus ruma, that you should from each of your dough boards or dough containers, vats, whatever, you shall take out a challah from the beginning of the arisa. So what does it mean, arisoseichem? It means the amount of dough that you need to make a proper batch of dough. What does that mean? How do we determine what a proper batch of dough is? The isas hamidbar, you go based on what they used to do in the times of the desert, that the dough that they used to make was an omer. The omer asiris ha'efahu, right? It says by the mon, mm-hmm. even though a mon... so that's a shayla, actually. So was the mon, if you made a dough out of mon, was a chayiv in chala or not? I think there's a whole hack about that. So now we know that, it was a Sefer Chiz about to say, that it's only the five species of grain that are chayiv in chala, but maybe it was a special gzeiras hakosov. I think they're curious about this. Maybe it was a special gzeiras hakosov that since the Torah calls them on lechem, that God is giving down lechem min hashamayim, so since it says lechem by the man, so maybe the man is chayiv and chal in addition to the five species of grain. Okay, there's a hack about that. So an omer is the tenth of an eifa. The eifa shalosh sein, an eifa is three sein. The asah shisha kabin, and asah is six kabin. The kabar bas lugin, a kav is four lugin. The alug shisha beitzim, and the lug is six egg volumes. So nimtzeis ha'efa tough lamed beis beitzim. So an efa, if you do the calculation, is 432 eggs. The asirisa, so divide that by 10, because we know that an omer is the tenth of an efa. So if an eifa is 432 eggs, so divide that by 10, you end up with 0.2. Mem gimel beitzim v'chomesh beitza, 43.2 egg volumes. V'zeo shir isa mechuyeves b'chala. Less than that amount, you don't have to separate challah. So that means that it's that from that amount of flour. It doesn't mean that the whole batch of dough is that volume. It means if you use that amount of flour to make a dough, then that is chayiv and challah. So how much is that in regular measurements that we have nowadays, the metric system? So if a beitza is 50 milliliters approximately, so then you end up with 2.16 liters of flour is chayiv and challah. What is that in English units?
Well, it doesn't actually say here. It just says that, you know, since we determine it in terms of weight rather than...
Right, so technically it's in terms of volume, but the Rambam says it's easier to measure flour in terms of weight than in terms of volume, right. So therefore he gives a weight for it, but that weight only applies... He says explicitly it applies to the Egyptian flour. You know, there are other types of flour, they could have different densities, so therefore you can't really go by weight, you really have to go by volume. But you're right, it is somewhat customary to give the shear in terms of weight. That's why I think they say that Rav Henkin used to tell people, just out of convenience, that if you use between 3 and 5 pounds of flour, so then it's chayiv b'challah. If you have to separate challah without a bracha, if it's to use 3 pounds of flour, and you have to celebrate challah with the bracha if it's over 5 pounds of flour. So the problem is that's going again with the issue that the famous issue with the shiurim, the machlokes between what's called the Reb Chaim Noah and the Chazunish. The question is whether the eggs that we have nowadays are smaller than the eggs that used to be in the times of Chazal. So the question is, the problem is that the Torah says, the Torah, the Gemara, the Chazal indicate, Midrashim, the Gemara implies this way also, that the Torah, that the Revius, which is the shear that you need for a cup, Koshel Bracha, Verkiddush, and Avdol, and the four cups, the Revius gives two different measurements. One is a beitza and a half, 1.5 egg volumes, and the other shear is two thumb breadths by 2.7 thumb breadths. Okay, it gives the shear for that volume. So it gives the shear in two different ways. So the question is, those shear don't match up. They don't match up. If you take your thumb widths and you make a cube with that volume, so then it comes out to be approximately double the shear that comes out with the giving of with taking the measurement in egg volumes. So a revius comes out if you if you use the egg volumes. Again, the average egg is approximately 50 milliliters in volume. Mm-hmm. Maybe in times of Chazal it was a little less. But the if they approximately 50, just to use a nice round number, approximately 50 milliliters in volume. So then a revius is 75 milliliters in volume. And if you come out, if you use the shear of the finger breadth, so it comes out about 150 milliliters, maybe a little bit less. So then you have a serious problem. This issue has perplexed the halachic community for many hundreds of years, with most poskim going in accordance with the smaller shiurim, that they say, no, the tradition was always to use a revius that was smaller, a revius that was approximately 75 milliliters, and you take challah from a smaller type of batch of those. So we go with a smaller types of shiurim, and then you have the Noda Bihuda, the Tzlach, and the Chazon Ish famously was a major proponent of this issue. That no, you can't contradict what your eyes see. That if you're that if you see that you measure in finger breadths and it's comes out bigger, then you have to go with a bigger shiur. That's why the Chazon Ish said that you have to, the Kiddush cup has to contain 150 milliliters as opposed to just 75 milliliters. And he held that you don't make a bracha unless you prepare a dough that's extremely large, and which would be double this. So instead of 2.5 liters, whatever, actually, the smaller shear comes out 2.1 liters, so whatever, 4 liters of flour is a lot more. And yeah, so this is a bit of an issue that some say. So the Noda Bihuda, in order to explain this discrepancy, said, well, how could it be that if we take the shear in eggs, then it's half the size if you take the shear in thumb breadths? How could that be? We have two options. Either thumbs got bigger from what they were in the times of Chazal, or it means that eggs got smaller. So it can't be that thumbs got bigger, because we know that they were so much greater than we were. So it can't be that people got smaller, but rather it must be that eggs got bigger from what they were in the times of Chazal. So obviously those assumptions are very questionable, that people nowadays are have much better nutrition, and we know that people generally are bigger than they were in the times of Chazal. So it is possible that they use the smaller thumb width, but even the smaller thumb width is not 100%... If you really want the thumb width to correspond to the egg volume, then it really has to be quite small. It really is an abnormally small thumb.
Thumb, the length of a thumb, possibly. You know, it could be like height or something like that, but the width of a thumb should be pretty much invariant. You know, it's not.
Yeah, so it is a bit of a difficult issue. But one thing we know for sure is that the eggs did not get bigger from what they were in the times of Chazal. If you go to Pompeii, for example, in Italy, you have preserved eggs from the times of Chazal. Or preserved the volcanic ash of Pompeii. Okay, that was Italy. Maybe the eggs in Eretz Yisrael were bigger. No. So we know that the eggs, if anything, probably got a little bigger than they were in the times of Chazal, rather than getting smaller. So you have a serious issue. So the question is, how far you have to take this. So the Mishnah Brura says that regarding Kiddush, so you should use the bigger cup for the Friday night Kiddush, because even though the Friday night Kiddush is technically the Rabbanan, because Kiddush on wine is the Rabbanan, nevertheless, it has a strong Deoraisa basis. So therefore, since it's very close to being a mitzvah Deoraisa, and perhaps some people will fulfill the mitzvah of, you should use the bigger shear for the cup of for Friday night, and for Shabbos, Kiddush Shabbos morning, and for Havdalah, you could use the smaller type of shear, and certainly if you want to use for benching or something like that, you could use the smaller shear. Others say, Reb Chaim Noe famously said that no, you have not only do we know that the eggs nowadays are not smaller than they were in the times of Chazal, but even more than that, the Rambam and the Geonim give the shear in terms of a dram, an Arab coin.
Oh, wow.
So in terms of the weight of water, that's this type of coin. So we know, so we took Turkish drams, and he said, no, it comes out approximately the smaller shear. In fact, a little bit bigger. He said that an egg volume was, I think, 57 milliliters based on this, and the revius was 86. Mm-hmm. Whatever, so the problem is that he also made a mistake, because the drams in the time of the Rambam were smaller than the Turkish drams. Mm-hmm. So we know that they really did correspond to the size of an average egg, and the revius was 75 milliliters. So this is an issue that has not the minhag in the Misora really is like the smaller shear. But it's an issue that has not been completely resolved. So when it comes to the shear of challah, so you have to take challah without a bracha from the shear of 2.1 approximately liters. I mean, maybe even with a bracha. You know, it depends whom you ask. That some people would say that no, the Misora is like this. This is the size of the eggs. So you can take challah. We ignore the larger shear, and you can take challah with a bracha from approximately 2.1 liters of flour, which I think is like 9 or 10 cups, something, not an enormously large amount of flour. You would definitely have to take challah from that shear, and the question is whether you should make a bracha. But if you follow the Chazon Ish, so then you don't take challah with a bracha until you reach an even larger amount. According to Rav Henkin, he gave the handy-dandy shear of five. You don't take challah with a bracha unless you have 5 pounds of flour. That was probably really a little less, even according to the Chazon Ish, 4 liters, something like that. If you use a whole bag of flour, right? Mm-hmm. A whole standard size bag of flour is 5 pounds. You have to use a whole bag of flour in order to be mafresh challah with bracha. So okay, but people should not make the mistake that they don't have to be mafresh challah unless they make an amount of 5 pounds of flour. Even if you use Reb Chaim Noah's shiurim, it's also wrong, because Reb Chaim Noah, who argued with the Chazon Ish, said that the shiurim were really on the small side. Again, the shiur that he was using was actually a little bit too big. So some people, if you just look at Reb Chaim Noah's recommendations for when you have to be mafresh challah, it's actually a little bit too large, and you really have to be mafresh challah, at least without a bracha, from even an amount smaller than that. So, yeah, I remember I went to someone's house for Shabbos once, and they had homemade challah. So, I don't know how this came up, but the Balas Habayis was saying how she makes small batches or something. I don't remember. So I said, the recipe calls for 10 cups of flour. Oh, but that's too small. You don't have to be mafresh. You don't really have to be mafresh challah from that amount. So, you know,
but you could take it yourself, right?
You could take it yourself, but it actually turned out. I said,
you can get college Shabbos.
No, but there are. So we'll get to the solutions, the potential solutions. There is a way you could take college Shabbos. We'll get there. So it turns out that she said, but she told me, I made a comment like, that's not so small. Maybe some opinions hold you have to take challah from that amount. She said, oh, of course I took challah just to be on the safe side. You know, I just didn't make a bracha. So then, okay, fine. So we were saved. But it really is a problem that many people potentially don't take challah from an amount that according to the basic halacha really should require challah.
I heard of somebody who made aliyah, just before Pesach.
Yeah.
So he went to the frumest possible place to get his matzahs from.
Yeah.
Every single chumran and so forth. But then finally he realized afterwards that, whoops, they didn't take challah. Because they wanted you to have the mitzvah of taking challah from the broken pieces, presumably.
Uh-huh. Yeah, from the broken pieces. So. You also have to make sure that challah is taken. That's certainly for... So in most baked products... You know, either they just have hechsher, and hopefully the hechsher is assumed to take care of this. Sometimes, so they write explicitly hufresh challah, that the challah has been separated. So then you don't have to take challah yourself. It's funny because apparently Manischewitz, if I'm not mistaken, was just bought by a goyish company. So now Manischewitz matzah, even for Pesach, is not chayiv in challah, because it's the bread is owned by a goy, so it's not chayiv in challah. It's only bread that's owned by a Jew is chayiv in challah. So they can't even write on it anymore.
Yeah.
But for challah, because it could be pas yisrael if the Jew turns on the oven. That doesn't mean that it's chayiv in challah.
They can say challah was taken just without a bracha. That's all.
Well, no, it's silly. You don't have to take bracha at all. A loaf of bread or a batch of dough is owned by a goy, it's completely exempt.
You know, no chashish of challah because, this is made by goyim. Yeah, sure, put that on the package.
So it's actually interesting because you used to rely on Manischewitz to get matzah that had specifically not had challah separated. Why? What did they need matzah that did not have challah separated for? They used to in order to make it easier for bakeries to be mafresh challah, mm-hmm. maybe ones where there wasn't a mashgiach tamidi. Not, I mean, I doubt they do this at the Haimish bakeries, but at a bakery that might potentially be owned by a Jew, but doesn't have a mashgiach supervising at all times, they used to take a box of Manischewitz matzah that specifically not had challah separated. Mm-hmm. So this matzah needed to have challah separated. So what they used to do is they used to take bit by bit of these matzahs that haven't been separated. They used to, the OU would, whenever a mashgiach would go to the factory, he would say, you know, all the, or maybe, I don't know exactly how this worked, come to think of it, but he used to say that a piece of this matzah that is obligated for challah is now, I'm now declaring this to be challah, and it should cover the bread and the bacon. Theory, what you could do, actually, is if you make a large batch of dough, you could take a piece of challah from the dough and say, I want this to be challah for all the dough in the world. The chatchila, you're not supposed to do that, because it was something what's called mina mukaf. It's all supposed to all be together. When you're separating truma or challah from something, it's supposed to all be together in one area. It's called min hamukaf. So you're not really supposed to do that lechatchila, but b'di'evad it would work. Apparently, there is a family in Bnei Brak that does this every day. They make a large batch of dough, and they separate challah, and they say, I want this to be challah to exempt all the doughs in the world that people forgot to separate challah from. So we'll do it to the mezaka people that they should, if they forgot to separate challah, they shouldn't be so toasted. So it's not so clear that this is really works. Also because a lot of the times people want to separate challah themselves. So, you know, maybe at that moment they forgot to separate challah, but they really want the mitzvah themselves. But maybe they were already exempted by these people. But the people can't exempt you against your will, so they can't exempt those people, exempt their will. So it's too much of a shtick. But nevertheless, they think they're doing a good service for the Jewish people, so there are people that do this. Mishor sheha mitzvah lefi shechayuso shel adam b'mezonos, that the life of a person is dependent on food. V'rov olam yichyu balechem, that the standard food of the human race is bread, or at least it used to be. And nowadays, people don't like bread anymore. It has too many carbs, to empty calories. People are on gluten-free diets, paleo diets, all these types of things where bread has become the devil. So bread was the main type of food. Like Rav Schechter always says when talking about how, you know, the bread is so central in Judaism that you have to bench only on bread and wash for bread and bread, you know, but matzah is bread and Shabbos is bread, 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 everything is bread. So he used to say, he always says, you know, he says, in the olden days they had bread. Nowadays we have food. So we have a lot wider variety of types of foods than in the olden days. It was pretty much bread with accompaniments. It wasn't, people didn't necessarily sit down to eat a piece of chicken for dinner. There would always be bread, and then if you're lucky, you could afford a little bit of chicken, and you could, you know, scoop the chicken up with your bread and eat it as some sort of sandwich. But that's why Rashi says, when it comes to the din, that when you make hamotzi, then it covers all the rest of the foods in the meal. So Rashi says that the reason that that's the case is because all the other foods are assumed to be eaten with the bread. So according to Rashi, and some other Rishonim, at our meals nowadays, this taka wouldn't work. You make hamotzi on bread at the beginning, and mm-hmm. then you have the bread on a tray in the middle of the table, and some people are touching it, some, you know, taking it, some people are not. And then by the time the chicken is served, or the meat is served, or the salads are served, so people have forgotten about the bread. They're not eating. Maybe it'll take a little bit, maybe. But people have forgotten about it. So according to Rashi, where if you have a meal and you eat bread at the beginning and then they serve chicken and you just have chicken on your plate and you're eating the chicken by yourself, you have to make a shakal in the middle of the meal on the chicken. So that's okay. But we don't pass like that. We pass like Tosfos that hold that no, that intrinsically bread exempts all the food from the meal, and you don't have to make a separate bracha as long as you're in the middle of a bread meal. So Ratzah Makom Lazakosenu B'mitzvah T'midas B'nachmenu K'dei Shetanuach Bracha Bo Al Yidei HaMitzvah Nekabel Ba Zechuz B'nafshenu. That since bread is such a common thing, and people are making bread all the time, and bread is such a central part of life, so God wanted to give us a mitzvah that related to bread, so that we have the opportunity to perform it all the time, and to have our bread be blessed in the merit of this mitzvah. Benimtzeis ha'isa mazon laguf u'mazon la'nefesh. So this dough now becomes not only physically sustaining, but spiritually sustaining as well. V'gam leman yichyu bo mesharsei Hashem ha'oskim tomid b'avodoso v'em ha'kohanim ibli yegia klau. So God also wanted to give the kohanim, who are the recipients of the challah, an opportunity to have ready-made food delivered to their door. She'ilu b'trumas ha'goren yeshlem amal ha'avir ha'tvua b'chvara litchonosa. So you have truma also that you give from the grain before you make it into challah. You have to give truma gedola and truma meiser. You have to give from the grain. So yeah, but that they have to sift it and grind it, and they have to work to make the bread. But no, so in addition to that, God wanted to give them an opportunity to have ready-made food delivered to their homes.
So yeah. You're going and the doorbell keeps ringing, and people come up with like a tiny little piece of dough that they're handing you all day.
You collect it. You collect them all, okay. And you bake a bread from the dough.
Okay.
Yeah, you could give more than the required amount.
Yeah.
Okay. If your best friend is a Kohen and has fallen on hard times, you might give extra. So here you literally just have the food ready made, and you don't have to work at all. We know as part of the Shorshei HaMitzvah, which is the Sefer Chinuch doesn't mention, but the mitzvah of challah is a particular mitzvah that is entrusted to women. Because, as we know, I mean, it's presented in a negative context in the Mishnah B'Mem Adlikin, where we have the three mitzvahs that are particular to women listed. So it says that women tend to die in childbirth if they're not careful about the performance of the mitzvahs of Nida, Chala, and Hadlokas Haner, and lighting a Shabbos candle. So then the Gemara elaborates on why those puts a little more of a positive spin on it. Not that if you don't do this, you're going to die, but rather an explanation of why it's particularly the women who are entrusted to perform these mitzvahs. So Nida, okay, a man cannot possibly perform. But Chalan Hadlokas Haner and the Chalan lighting Shabbos candles, it is possible for a man to perform. But it says that since women are the ones who are generally, at least in those times, they were the ones who are generally found at home and taking care of the household needs. So mitzvahs that are particularly related to household needs, like mitzvahs that are performed while cooking and baking, challah. The other stuff is done in the field. The trumas and maaser before are taken before the food gets into the home. But here, this has to be prepared while in the kitchen. And the lighting of the candles also, again, is part of the... Again, there are also mystical reasons given for this, which is that Chava in Gan Eden, so she corrupted the choicest part of the world, of Adam. So since he was the choicest part of the world, Chaloso Shel Olam, he was taken out of the world to be the main focus of the world, the holiest part of the world, and she corrupted him, so she has the opportunity... her descendants, women, okay, men are also her descendants, okay, but the women like her have the opportunity to rectify Chava's error by being extra careful about the mitzvah of challah. And also for lighting the candles, again, the idea that that Adam was like the candle to light up the world, and she destroyed the opportunity, so therefore she has to bring light back into the world by means of lighting Shabbos candles in order to make that happen. Okay, so but we put a positive spin on it, so we could take either just that these are particularly given to women because they are found. They, again, in the old times, they were found more in the house almost exclusively, and they were the ones who were in the kitchen and preparing these things more than the men. So you have women who are very careful about this. It's brought some svarim suggest that a woman should A woman should be mafresh challah every Friday in honor of Shabbos. So some women are makbid on that they prepare in order to make sure that it's an extra honor of Shabbos if they bake homemade bread, and or at least a cake, something that's chayiv and challah, a large cake. That would have to be a large batch of cake that would be chayiv and challah. So some women are makbid to be mafresh challah every single Friday, and as is well known. So, Rebbetzin Kanievsky, the one of the most spiritually significant Jewish women of recent generations, she was makbid to be mafresh challah every day. Not that she would personally bake necessarily, but she used to go to the bakery. She used to go to a bakery in Bnei Brak every morning, and she would be the one to be mafresh challah at the bakery. Yeah. Okay, so again, if you're just going with the idea that any extra performance of challah is better, so then okay. But if the issue is that you want it in your own home, and your own bread that's baked in honor of the weekend in honor of Shabbos, so then she would then perhaps that's unnecessary to do so. And apparently, they asked her husband, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, if there's any source in Chazal. And we know there's a source for baking to be mafresh challah before every Shabbos, but to be mafresh challah every day, like, is there a source for that? So he answered, no, there's not a source for it, but nevertheless, the Rebbetzin knows what she's doing, and we don't question her motives. Okay. But even if someone is not going to be mafresh challah every week, so it is a good idea. Again, especially for women, that's one of their particular three mitzvos, that it's good for her to be mafresh challah from time to time. I haven't baked in a long time, but I would make a large batch of my challah. It wasn't really challah, it was more like bread. So I would try, if at all possible, unless I was afraid I would forget, so I would try to leave it for my wife to be mafresh challah, because it's a particular mitzvah, even though I made the dough, so maybe I should get the mitzvah, but I gave it to her, because it's a particular, again, it's considered a particular mitzvah for women to be makbid, to be mafresh challah. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the halachos of the mitzvah of challah? Ma'asham ha-zichran ha-lebracha, she'en chiyuv ha-isa mishanasan ha-kemach ba-arisa, that it's not when you pour the flour into the area where you're going to prepare the dough that you don't have to be mafresh challah at that point. And in fact, even if you were mafresh, it wouldn't work because it's just flour. El achiyuv umishas gilgul. It starts when kilomar mishiyarif hakemach ve'amayim miyad chiyuv hachalah chal. That when you mix the water and the flour, that's when the requirement of separating challah takes effect. So this is actually a subject of debate that other Rishonim hold, that it's not right when you mix the flour with the water. It's actually, Mishas Gilgul means that it's when you knead it together and it's all become one solid mass. That's when you start having to be Mafresh Challah. But the Sefer Chinuch, I think following the Rambam, says that it's just when you pour the water into the flour and it sort of mixes together a little bit, that's when you have to start being Mafresh Challah. So dough is only chayav b'chala if it's made from one of the following five species: hachitim, asorim, v'kusmin, v'shibola, shual, v'shifon. So traditionally, it's translated as wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. Again, there's some issues with the identification of certain of these species, but the basic idea is that anything in the wheat family and the barley family, yeah?
Actually, the OU has a daily halacha thing they send out in the email, and they've actually been talking about Mishas Challah, and they said that, I believe, if I recall, somebody asked, well, what if I had, like, I don't know, four parts of rice flour and one part of oat flour, or something like that, for some, the gluten-free, kind of bread. They said you have to take challah from it.
That's true. Well, yeah, that's true. So there is an adin, which is, it's a little bit hard to understand. I think Reb Chaim, in his Chidushim on the Rambam, has an extensive discussion of the conceptual basis of this halacha, where if you have a dough that's made of a quasi grain like rice, it wouldn't work if you had, like, you ground up apples or something and mixed the flour into it, but you have a quasi grain like rice and you put enough real grain flour in it to affect the taste, to be able that the dough now tastes like it's made of wheat flour or barley flour or whatever. then that is chayev and challah, and you would be allowed to eat that in Pesach in order to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. If it's, you know, not chometz. So how exactly that works is questionable, but nevertheless, that is the din, yeah. If you mix a rice with another type of flour, that's chayev and challah, then that would be... You would have to take challah, yeah. But I think that's pretty rare. When most people want gluten-free, they're not... I mean, oats themselves are a shayla. Mm-hmm. Oats are, you know, traditionally, Rashi lists oats as, translates shibolas shual as oats. Mm-hmm. So that would put them in the five species of grain. But the problem is, really, that oats are very dissimilar to wheat and barley. Mm-hmm. And they have much less or zero gluten. Which is presumably the reason that these five species can also become chametz is because gluten is a necessity for the chametz process.
Mm-hmm. Well, for it to actually rise, I mean, you can still ferment.
Right. Right, because ferment.
The bubbles will just simply...
Right, is it called chametz or is it called sirchon? That's mm-hmm. what the Gemara mm-hmm. says, that if you make a dough out of rice and you let it ferment, so it doesn't... Rice.
It just gets holes in it, you know, because it doesn't expand.
So that's not chametz, except according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri held that rice was a min dagan, it was one of the species of grain, even though it doesn't have gluten, which is strange. So he obviously held that wasn't a criterion, but the chachamim who argue with him apparently think that gluten is a criterion. So oats don't really have gluten. The gluten that it comes is from cross-contamination with wheat. And they look completely different. So that's why the Rambam translates shibul ashul as some sort of wild barley. So that means that all these five species of grain are really types of really wheat and barley species. Mm-hmm. And then you have another problem, which is rye. So rye is a European grain. It wasn't really found in Eretz Yisrael, but it does have gluten. So it's sort of in between. Mm-hmm. So what are you going to do? The traditional translation is that it's on the list of the five. But the Rambam certainly doesn't translate it that way, and you have a problem because it does have gluten, but it might not be on the list. So is that chametz gomer, or is it not chametz gomer? So the question is, were Chazal telling us that these five species are the only five in the world, and the rest are not really species of grain? Or no, if you find another species that sort of acts chemically in consonance with the way these five species act, so that should also be considered an absolute min dagan, a species of absolute halachic grain, and it would be absolute chametz, and it would be chayi b'chala, etc. So whatever it is, so
what yeah. is spelt exactly?
Spelt is a species, is a type of wheat.
Type of wheat, okay, right.
So. Yes, yeah, so spelt is for sure min dagan. Okay. Well, so it's a very close relative of regular wheat. The spelt has a little less gluten than regular wheat, which is why some people are sensitive to gluten, so eat spelt bread and spelt matzah on Pesach. But it's not... so people... I don't know. But it's that's for sure fine. It's not that's not a problem. In any event, we have the traditional definition. It's easy to remember: wheat, barley, rye, oats, and spelt. That any of these species will be chayav b'challah, but you have different poskim adopting different approaches to if you have a dough that is completely oat flour. So then, should you be mafresh with a bracha or not? That would be one potential nafka mina. Another thing about oats, which is very interesting, is that if oats aren't one of the five species of grain, that means Chazal didn't mention oats at all. So even though I think the evidence indicates that they did grow in Eretz Yisrael at that time, maybe they weren't used for human consumption, they didn't really talk about it. So the question now is it worse than rice? Right, so rice is a quasi-grain, and you make mizonos on it when it's cooked, which is unusual. You normally make mizonos only on things that are a porridge that's made of the five species of grain. But if you have rice, or you have a rice cake or something, that's also mizonos. But nevertheless, the bracha afterwards is bari nefashos, because it's not a real species of grain, so it's not alamichya. So the question would be, even if you would hold that oats are not one of the species of grain, so what would be the bracha on oatmeal? Would it be mizonos? Like, because not worse than rice, it's hardier, perhaps even than rice. Even if the bracha afterwards is bar nefesh and not al hamichya, so that's something to consider as well.
And if corn existed, then probably corn would be the same, you know, category as rice, very likely. So they make bread out of corn, whatever it was. It's a grain, you know.
So how far do you want to go with that? You say you should make mizonos on quinoa also? I don't know. I don't think so, because the rice, the mizonos point is that it starts to stick together and it starts to look a little bit like one of the species of grain. But quinoa and those things don't really do that. Corn doesn't really either, does it? Grits maybe does. I don't know. It's a good question. But the question is, even if you make mizonos on it, if you make mizonos on oatmeal, and oatmeal is not really supposed to be mizonos, so we pass in there yotzi b'dievet, because we hold that mizonos works b'dievet for any food like shahakol, except for water and salt. Shakel works obviously for water and salt, but mizonos wouldn't work for water and salt. Okay, so these five pieces of grain are chayav b'chala shenemar vayav ochlechem milechem haaretz. When you eat from the bread of the land, v'im karui lechem elapas anaseis me'elu. So it's only one of these five species that is called bread. V'chula mitzdarfin l'shir chala. And all these five species of grain could join together to form the appropriate shear for being mafresh challah. Meaning, you don't need 43 and a fifth eggs volume of just wheat flour, just barley flour, just spelt flour. But if you combine 10 eggs of each of the five species and you make a dough out of that, then that would be chayav b'challah.